Hospital Celtics never stop. Kemba might be coming back, but now Marcus and Jason might be out. Danny Ainge talks about the buyout market, and I talk about deceptive stats. It's the Tuesday Locked On Celtics podcast. Millie's, let's go. Rain and Jay's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Boston Celtics getting ready to take on the Brooklyn Nets tonight, Tuesday night. And I, John Corrales of MassLive.com, will be in the building for the Boston Celtics-Brooklyn Nets matchup. Along with Tom Westerholm, you can always find our coverage, complete coverage, on MassLive.com/Celtics. I would contend that it compares very favorably to any other Celtics coverage, perhaps even better than any other Celtics coverage, but that's not for me to say, that's for you to say. So I hope you follow the Celtics coverage there on masslive.com/Celtics. For now, I'm going to be talking about the things that they were talking about in practice on Monday at Danny Ainge's comments and the stat coming up later on. Kemba Walker spoke to the media, ton of media, by the way, ton of media. It was wild. It was almost like a playoff game. It was so much so that I was very annoyed by the number of people there because it kind of prevented me from hearing everything. But we got all the information. Kemba Walker says he's back, and Brad Stevens says it kind of depends on how he feels Tuesday morning when they go through the shoot around. So we will get final confirmation. Follow me on Twitter, RedsArmy_John, if you don't already. Or follow the Locked On Celtics Twitter, but me, RedsArmy_John, because that's where all the news is going to break. We'll find out on Tuesday morning after shoot around how Kemba Walker felt, but he feels, it seems, ready to come back. And the obvious, as and Chuck and I talked about this on the Monday podcast a little bit, but I think there's a plan in place and it's going to involve some level of rest for Kemba Walker. And Brad Stevens says he doubts that there will be back-to-backs. So my idea, and Chuck and I talked about this. Actually, we talked about this off the podcast more so than we did on the podcast. But here's my thought for the plan. This is what I think. Brad Stevens says doubtful for back-to-backs. And Kemba Walker says he's back. He understands he's going to be limited. So my feeling, Brooklyn, Tuesday, he's going to play. I don't even think he travels on Wednesday to Cleveland. I think it's in his best interest and the team's best interest to leave Kemba home, have him go through treatment at home on Wednesday. Cleveland's not great, although they kind of pushed Utah to the brink a little bit on Monday night. But Cleveland's obviously not great, so, and you don't want to, I know they travel in luxury and all that stuff, but honestly, getting into a plane, pressurized cabin, going up, going down, like that has an impact on injuries. And I don't want any of the swelling, I don't want them to tempt any fate. Give him 2 days off, get him off his feet for Wednesday, so no travel to Cleveland, stay home. Play against Utah, play against OKC, go to Indy, go to Milwaukee, sit at home against Washington, and then you have Chicago after 2 days off. 2 days off at home, you play the Knicks, go to Toronto, sit the Brooklyn game on Saturday, then go to Washington, go to Memphis, and then you kind of play out the rest of the regular season that way. And then in April, you may have some targeted rest. Maybe there's another back-to-back in the fourth and third game, final games of the season. Orlando, Miami, maybe you sit him against Orlando and you play him against Miami and then you see how the regular season plays out. That's my thought. That's how I see the Kemba plan kind of playing out. So, but he is expected to play against Brooklyn, provided that Tuesday shoot-around goes well. And, again, expect limited minutes. Don't expect 35 minutes. Maybe in one of these games, they'll try to pump it up a little bit. But it definitely won't be Brooklyn. They want to ease him back. But somewhere in that mix, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Chicago game, he got a bunch of like 36 minutes or something. Because then you get a couple days off, and if they need to rest them against New York, they can, and get them ready for Toronto. Toronto's really the big game, as I've said. That's the game. If they win that Toronto game, I feel like they have a really strong chance at the second seed. But they'll slowly ramp him up, and eventually they'll get him up to 35 minutes or so. And they're going to need him to play those minutes, because obviously the bench isn't giving them a ton of points, and they're going to need him to play a lot. And Marcus Smart's going to be the guy who's going to be scoring off of the bench. And Marcus Smart going to the bench is going to help because, you know, he's a good ball handler. He's a good passer. He's a good playmaker. He can go and help facilitate. I love Brad Wanamaker, but Marcus Smart's a lot better. So getting Kemba there, getting Kemba the 40 minutes, now you've got a guy coming off the bench in Marcus Smart that can also give you 35 to 40 minutes. That really helps. And all of a sudden your bench production looks a lot better with Marcus Smart coming off the bench. And he can find Robert Williams for lobs. Like, he's the one guy that's always been able to throw the lobs. So that's going to help a lot. We'll see exactly how the whole plan goes, but that's how I see everything playing out. Now, another thing that may happen in the Brooklyn game, Marcus Smart and Jason Tatum, both sick, both missed practice on Monday. So who knows how sick they are, but that is, they could be missing two guys against Brooklyn. So, you know, it just never stops. It never stops with this team. Hopefully someday, one day, they'll all be healthy, but obviously, if you're sick, you're sick, and you definitely don't want them coming in and making everybody else sick. So stay home, get better, and, you know, rest up. The Celtics, when we walked in to practice on Monday, Jamie Young, the assistant coach, was walking around with Purell to give everybody the hand sanitizer, which was funny. But that brought up the whole conversation about coronavirus. And, you know, that's a big thing. The NBA issued a statement basically saying they're going to be cautious and they're going to, you know, take in the information. Brad Stevens was, you know, I don't want to say dismissive, but he's just like, you know, look, we're going to wash our hands. We're going to do common sense things. We're not going to overreact, because he never overreacts to anything, but we're going to do smart things. Kemba Walker said that, you know, he referenced CJ McCollum, who is not signing autographs. McCollum on his Twitter said, I'm not signing autographs at games until further notice. And that's a precaution, because you don't know who's sick. You don't know who's coming into the arena. You don't know what they have. Even if it's like sniffles, even if that person doesn't know it, you don't know. So there's this feeling of like, well, I'm not going to grab the thing that they've been holding, the pen that they've been holding, the marker. So CJ McCollum's not signing autographs. And now Kemba's like, I might join him. But then he kind of said, like, I'll probably sign autographs, but maybe I'll walk around with my own marker, which, not a bad idea. When you come off the court, have your own marker, walk around, don't touch anything. Just you hold it, I'll sign it. That's a nice compromise. Okay. No high fives. No, don't touch me. Like, we'll keep our distance. But that's kind of like the compromise. Guys are a little afraid. Let's just take it easy. And I think that's a nice place to settle. Will security make any changes at the games? I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of held fans back a little bit. Maybe set something up so you can't lean over quite as much. Maybe like the when fans hold their hands out and do high fives out of the tunnel, like maybe that'll go away for a little while until this whole thing settles down. So I'll just say that if you're going to the games, whether it's this game or another game somewhere, just watch for that. You don't know. And be aware, be understanding, because these guys have, you know, their own fears. Even if Kemba or like more like Jason Tatum or Gordon Hayward, people with kids, these guys are young guys, 25 years old, 22 years old, whatever they are, you know, guys who are young, in shape, those guys can get coronavirus and like, it'll be like the flu for them. They'll shake it off. But they've got kids and kids are vulnerable. And if this thing is more serious than the flu, I mean, the regular flu is dangerous. The regular flu kills old people and children. So I hate to say that, but that's like true. That happens every year around the world. That's a fact. So if coronavirus is as dangerous as the flu, even if you're one of the people who says, it's just like the flu, it's still dangerous. And if it's more dangerous than that, these people have kids. So just understand that there may be a little limitation in the interaction. I'm sorry if this is the only game you get to, but they're a little bit scared of it, and you just have to understand. So just keep that in mind. Next, Danny Ainge talking about a buyout and why this team might not be looking to sign anybody else. Next on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Danny Ainge addressed the buyout market. It's everyone had to be waived by March 1st. So all of the players waived before, like over the weekend, they're all eligible to sign with new teams. You don't have to sign by March 1st. That's always a confusing thing for people at this time of year. Even if a guy hasn't signed by now, it doesn't mean that they can't sign down the road. As long as they are free agents before March 1st, they're eligible to be signed. So the Celtics can sign anybody in the G League, anybody who is playing overseas, anybody who was waived before March 1st. They can sign them in the coming weeks. They can sign them next month. They can sign them before the playoffs, and they'd be eligible for the playoffs. Now, of course, the Boston Celtics have to waive somebody if they do that. And they have not been anxious to waive anybody when it comes to adding a buyout level player. The best buyout guys have all been signed, and I'd say most of them probably not expected to have much of an impact. At this point, when you look at who might be available on the market, well, is that person going to take the place of, let's say, Carson Edwards? I mean, really, who are the main candidates at this point, in this moment, to be cut for somebody that gets bought out or a foreign player? You've got Poirier, you've got Carson Edwards, and you've got Javonte Green. I mean, those are the three, I would say, prime candidates. Well, Carson Edwards has a guaranteed deal for next season. So cutting Carson Edwards means you would have $1.5 million in dead money next year and then $1.7 the year after. So he's got a multi-year deal. Javonte Green is a guy that you can cut. He's got a non-guaranteed deal. Vincent Poirier has a guaranteed deal, $2.6 million next year. And then after that, he's a restricted free agent. So do the Celtics really want dead money on their cap next year? No. Not unless the person coming in is going to be like obvious help. And there's just not a name out there that says, well, this guy is worth paying him whatever we're going to pay him plus the $1.5 million or the $2.6 million next year, or getting rid of Javonte Green, who we have locked up as a $1.5 million next year non-guaranteed salary. And maybe you can trade Javonte Green. You can use him in a trade because his salary doesn't guarantee until the middle of next season. So I just don't see any of those names out there. And Danny Ainge spoke to Adam Himmelsbach of The Globe and basically said, and I'll use his quote, "We're still looking at that situation. We haven't made any decisions. We like our guys right now, and the likelihood is we'll stay as we are. We could sign anybody that's in the G League or playing overseas, or anyone that's already been bought out could still be available. So we're going to take our time. There's nobody that we for sure want to sign right now." So that's where the Celtics are. And I would anticipate that's where they stay. I don't think the Celtics, and we talked about it with Chuck yesterday, the bench is what it is, and the bench is supporting players for the five starters and Marcus Smart. And you can count Daniel Tice as a supporting player. So the best five players are who they are. We know who those guys are. Daniel Tice is essentially a supporting player, but a really good supporting player for those guys. And he's a starter. You're adding Robert Williams, who hopefully can get some minutes and can contribute. You're adding a healthy Kemba Walker now. You're getting up to full speed. Between the staggering of the starters, between Marcus Smart coming off the bench at full strength, theoretically, we're going to be at full strength for a while. With all of that happening, I feel like it's not ideal. It's certainly not ideal. I mean, obviously you want five starters and three guys off the bench you can count on, but that's okay. That's the championship team. That's the championship level team. The Celtics, as we know, were never going to be a championship level team this year. Like, that's not the situation that they're in. The Celtics weren't built to be a championship contender. And I think we have to really get that through our heads a little bit. Like, this is a great season. This is an amazing season. There are 58 wins. And I understand that the theory is like, hey, man, you're potentially a 58-win team. You support the team that you have now and you go for it. Well, you have it. You didn't realize this was going to be the team. But you know what? They overachieved. So support them and let them make their run. Okay, fine. I get that. Except there are long-term things that were done. The hard cap this year in the sign-in trade that got Kemba Walker here. Okay? That extension for Jaylen Brown. A lot of these things come into play here where, you know, you give Jaylen Brown that extension when you did, which means he wasn't tradable, which means you couldn't use him potentially to do the things that we're talking at the beginning of the season, where you turn him into a couple of role players and you just go with Hayward in that spot and you fill out your bench a little bit. Like, you couldn't do some of these things. The Celtics committed to a longer term plan, and this year's team just basically was the opposite of last year's team. Where everything went wrong last year, most things went right this season. And the only thing that didn't go right this season was the health. And they are still on pace for a 58-win season, which is insane. So we have to understand that so much has gone right for these guys, but the plan was never to have this kind of season now. And that kind of handcuffed the Celtics. They made this commitment to Carson Edwards before this season started. And it's not insane to give a guy like that a multi-year deal at $1.5 million, because that's nothing. And you could throw that into a deal to just make money work. And you can cut him if you need to, if it makes sense. But you also like roll the dice on a guy like that, and maybe he can help. And you saw the way he played in summer league and the way he played in preseason. You saw, oh, well, hey, maybe this is a guy that can catch on. We still haven't even seen what Romeo Langford can do. That's the one thing that didn't go right this season. If there's one thing for a player that didn't go right, you can point to Romeo Langford and say that dude got hurt so much that he kind of missed the boat on being able to help this team. And we're seeing some of those things. We saw him in the Houston game have a few productive minutes, not great minutes overall, still kind of out of sorts because it's a little late for him to kind of get into the flow, but you still saw him show flashes of like, wow, defensively, he had a couple of good turns on Harden. Like, there are little positive flashes here and there. But that's a missed opportunity. That's a guy that they were kind of counting on. And if he didn't get hurt so much, maybe that's one of the solutions to the bench. It is what it is. But they kind of had a plan. This team kind of outperformed that plan. But salary cap, financial stuff kind of prevents them from doing certain things. And as we've talked about on the podcast before, some of the things that they wanted to do or some of the ideas that we had, it's not feasible. Davis Bertans didn't get traded. Nemanja Bjelica didn't get traded. Guys that we were targeting that we know could help this team and that you're willing to give up some of these players, they didn't get moved. So it is what it is. So these are the guys. This is the team. It's a lovable team. It's been a lovable team. So buckle up. The rest of the season is here. The last couple dozen games and then the playoffs. These are the guys. Love these guys. This is it. You know what I mean? This is the team you're rolling with. Coming up next, fun with stats. And maybe I'm going to be a Debbie Downer again. I don't know. We'll see. Stick around.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
All right, this is sort of an extension of the can we not conversation that had mixed reviews the other day last week. And this comes from the NBC Sports Boston. They have a separate Twitter thing. Basically, it's whatever, it's a stat-based thing. And they put out this tweet that said, players in NBA history to average 17 points or more in the regular season and 17 points or more in the postseason who are under 21 years old, and they have the list. And the list is Jason Tatum. Only one. And they say, Jason Tatum, end of list. Damn. Okay, which is nice. It's nice that he has that. Jason Tatum came in, and in the first 2 years of his career, averaged 17 points in the regular season and 17 points in the postseason prior to his 21st or as a 21-year-old. Okay? He actually turns 22 today, March 3rd. So happy birthday, Jason Tatum, 22 years old. Hard to believe a 22-year-old is only 19. But so this NBC Sports Boston account tweeted this out. It's a great stat. Like, it looks great. 17 points per game as a 21-year-old or less. 17 points a game in the playoffs. He's the only guy ever to do that. Amazing, right? Well, not really. Like, it's amazing. Yes, it's amazing. Like, that's a lot for a guy in his first couple years in the league. So amazing, yes, full stop, amazing. It's great. It's a great number. It's great. But also misleading. Because two reasons. Guys who come into the league nowadays who are 19, 20, 21 years old, who are that good, who are good enough to average those numbers, they usually go to bad teams. Okay. So the Brooklyn trade, the Pierce Garnett trade, that move that got the Celtics the number three pick, or the number one pick, by the way, the number one pick, that's the Markelle Fultz trade. But those deals put Jason Tatum in a unique situation. Most guys in those situations go to bad teams. Okay. Markelle Fultz had a chance, but that all went the way we know it went. So obviously he was not one of them. Other guys who might have had a chance, like Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, I don't even know, but whatever. They got hurt, so they didn't have the chance. Okay. So some luck is involved here. Bad luck for them. Good luck, I guess, for Tatum is in regards to the stats. But most guys go to bad teams, like Ja Morant, like Zion Williamson. Those guys don't have the opportunity, generally, to play the 20 postseason games, as is stated on this tweet, the 20 postseason game minimum. So they add the other caveat, by the way, to this stat. It's not just 17 and 17. You have to have played 20 postseason games in 2 years, which means you've had to go through multiple playoff series, which means you have to be on a team that's good enough to play 20 postseason games. Most rookies who are 19, 20, 21, they don't get a chance to do that. Most guys in those first 2 or 3 years don't get a chance to do that. Ja Morant's not going to get a chance to do that. He's not upsetting the Lakers. If Zion gets into that in the playoff spot instead, he's not going to upset the Lakers. Now, maybe Zion next year has a deeper run and he can qualify for that. Okay, then that would be amazing and be very impressive. That's a whole different story. But most guys don't get this opportunity. Also, beyond that, most guys who did average that in their first 2 or 3 years, but were older than 21, came before the one and done era. So the really good players like Larry Bird, who came in and won a championship in his second year, but who came in as a 23 year old, because you played 3 years in college, at least. Back then, you didn't come out after a year. Hell, some of these guys weren't even allowed to play varsity in their freshman years because of, you know, antiquated rules. But whatever. My point is, if you extend this list out to just players in their first 2 years, the list gets a bit longer than Jason Tatum. And why this is an extension of the can we not, is because this just isn't fair to Tatum. Like, this is, you're skewing the numbers. You're trying too hard. And that was the entire point of the other podcast. This is the entire point of my argument with Jason Tatum. You're trying too hard to elevate a guy that doesn't need that much effort to be elevated. Just sit back and enjoy the show. That's all I'm saying. You don't have to force feed us these fake stats. You don't have to put the sliders on these stats to a point where, like, oh, if I put this here and that there, and oh, if I put 21 years old, oh, there's other guys. Oh, if I put, the list is five people or whatever it is, but if I put minimum 20 postseason games, it's only one person. So I'm going to make it seem like Jason Tatum is this historically amazing player. And I mean, maybe someday he'll be viewed as such, but to have him to create this fake list, like Jason Tatum's the only player in NBA history to do that without context, you're doing this guy a disservice. You're really force feeding us something without any context. And It hurts the perception of him. It makes us, people who regurgitate this stat, it makes people look bad. Because then people who know a little bit better can say, oh, well, yeah, but this, this, and this. And you got people just repeating the stat without any knowledge of history, and you're making them look bad. You're like, well, yeah, you know, Larry Bird was pretty good in his first few years, and you know, a lot of these guys in their first few years who were on playoff teams were pretty good, and you know, whatever. Like, Jason Tatum is awesome. Jason Tatum could be an all-NBA player this year, which we didn't see coming. Jason Tatum could be a multiple-time All-Star. Jason Tatum might spend the rest of his career on All-Star teams, for all we know. You know, this kid is going to be really special. We don't have to force-feed these stats. We don't. Because he's going to give us stats that matter, that are awesome, and put him in historical conversations. If he continues down this path, he's going to create these types of things for us. He's going to write his own history. We don't have to force feed it for him. He's going to do it. So let's just sit back and let him do it. That's all I'm saying. I'm not trying to crush people's dreams. I'm not trying to piss on people's parades. I'm not trying to be like, oh, you're fun at parties. Like, all I'm saying is, let him write his history. And then we get to be like, wow, look at this history. Instead of faking history before it happened. Because that's what it comes off as. It's fake. It doesn't make sense. So, that came off as more of a rant than I expected. I'm just going to leave it there. And say thanks for listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast. The next one is coming up after the Brooklyn Nets game, and hopefully the Celtics get back to their winning ways and have an opportunity, because the Toronto Raptors lost again and hopefully lose again on Tuesday night. The Celtics have an opportunity to get into that second seed all by themselves. It's possible, so we'll see what happens. After that game, the podcast coming up after the Brooklyn Nets game. So please subscribe so this podcast comes directly to your device wherever you listen to a podcast. If it's Spotify, if it's Stitcher, if it's another app that you have, you can subscribe to the Locked On Celtics podcast. You can also give a 5-star rating or a good written review on iTunes. iTunes is kind of like the standard list, so please do that there if you can, or wherever. Spotify lets you do it. Anywhere you can give a good written review, please do so. It's really, really helpful. And share the podcast. Tell everybody. Listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.